the next disease is actually a little bit paradoxical, and I'm not going to go into. I chose a very light one because I knew that it was going to get late. Because the next ones in order was things like Hubuddunya, and these are like heavy ones, like big diseases. And that's like Rasu Kullu Khatiya, right? That's like the major disease. So I didn't want to do something heavy. I said, let's just do something light. So one of them is a disease is what we call Haya. So you're like, are you serious? Haya is a disease? I thought Haya is like good. And in fact, in Hadith, it comes, Al-Haya wa la yati illa bi khair. Aw kama qal, that Haya doesn't bring except for good. Right? In one of the Mashayikh, they said it beautifully. They said that if Haya were to be made into a human, that human would only be doing good. Right? And he said it very poetically. So how can Haya be a disease? So and how do you reconcile it with the Hadith? The way that you do tatbiq is the idea is that there's two types of Haya. There's actually multiple types of Haya. There's Haya Shar'i, Haya Tab'i. But there's, if you want to think of it in very simple terms, there's a good type of haya and a bad type of haya. The good type of haya, it only brings good, right? And even if you go to a great degree, and every religion has a khosla, has a distinctive caste characteristic, and the characteristic of our deen is haya, right? This modesty. I won't go into talking about modesty because, you know how we have this whole idea of purification of the heart is removing of the diseases. There's also another science of the adornment of the heart. So of making the heart and making it, you know, they say tahdhibul akhlaq. And you look at tahdhib, it also has letters ha, za, and ba. And if you interpolate it, right, it's also dhahab, right? And the idea is that to become golden. Right? For a person to become golden. So once you clear the room of your heart from these spiritual diseases and it starts to shine, then tasfiyatul qulub, then you start to polish it. So it shines, then you start to adorn it. No, like one thing is like, you know, you buy a fixer-upper, right? DIY. You buy investment property, you walk in, there's like mold on the walls, it needs painting, it needs new cabinets, and you start throwing out all the garbage. You rent a dumpster and you throw everything in. Once you get everything out, you're like, dang, now this place is clean. Are you done? No. You still have to furnish it, you have to paint it, you have to decorate it, you have to put sconces on the wall, you have to buy paintings. That's when the real beauty of it comes out. In the same way, the heart, once you clean all of these things off, you need to put all the beautiful things in there. You need to put tawheed in there, you need to put karam in there, you need to put ikhlas in there, you need to put sidq in there, you need to put hope in Allah in there. And that's a whole different topic. We won't have time to, obviously, in this series to go through those. But, so the opposite side, you need to put haya in there. Right? That's actually a big thing. So I'm not going to talk about haya. But what is blameworthy haya? Blameworthy haya is that when a person is too shy to speak or act when it's actually indicated. And there are several scenarios where this can happen. Actually, there's six scenarios. The first point comes when there is a need to protect your deen, but a person feels too shy to speak up. So, for example, you go to a restaurant, they're serving your thing, you know that they're serving pork on the same, they fry pork on the, or cook pork on the same grill, right? And you know that, but you should ask them to, you know, use a new pan or, you know, separate your dish or to make sure there's no cross-contamination, but you feel too shy, right? You feel too shy. How do I ask them? You go to, you know, the doctor's place. You have a choice to ask for a male nurse, you know, to take care of you or a female nurse, but you feel too shy, right? So this shyness to protect your deen or something in your deen, this is blameworthy. It's something which is not good. Sometimes shyness comes when it comes to protecting your own family. Right? So sometimes what happens is someone may say something inappropriate to a person's spouse. Right? Someone may say something or do something to your children, but a person feels too shy to say something else. It's part of muruwa. Right? That they're your ra'iyya. They are under your care. So they're in a manner. You need to take care of them. That's your responsibility. You have to be a man. And sometimes, you know, that means that if you have to fight, then you have to fight for what's yours. And if it means that you need to put your, you know, put yourself on the line, you need to protect. These are your children, your wife, the people who are under your care. That's your responsibility. And you can take that at every level of responsibility, you know, wherever you are in your organizations, or, you know, if you're taking care of nations, then they're all your, you know, your ra'iyah. They're under your care. So you need to take care of them. Protecting the oppressed. Sometimes people are too shy to speak up about that. So you're passing by someone, right? And they do these social experiments on the internet, right? Where someone will be like purposely like badgering like a Muslim or something, or badgering a black person, or badgering someone, and they just see how people react around them. Most people just don't care. They just walk right by. They don't want to get involved, right? They just move away. It's not okay, right? And it's actually, there's like some people will actually say, "Hey, stop that. You can't say that to them. You can't do that." And, you know, it's courageous. It's really, like, I remember when, you know, when Trump first came in and he was thinking of doing that Muslim ban, right? And there was actually a lot of fear amongst a lot of Muslims that there would be another, like, Japanese internment. And like he said, "We don't know about these Muslims. We don't know what they're going." Like, you have 10 years of FBI data. You certainly know, right, what's going on with the Muslims. We've been under surveillance for 10 years, and we've actually been exonerated. So don't tell me that you don't know. But say, let's say that you didn't know, so they're like unknown quiddities, so let's put them in internment until we can figure them out. So Muslims are scared. I remember there's this one tech in my lab. She like pulled me to the side, and I mean, metaphorically pulled me to the side. And she's like, and she tells me, she said, "You know, if..." And she, I mean, just the fact that she was thinking about it, she says, "You know, if they put you in prison," she's like, "I'm going with you, right? I'm going with you." Like, this is Hima speaking up for the people who are downtrodden and speaking up for their rights. And it's not something whether you're Muslim or non-Muslim or something. It's a person of speaking up for their oppressed. Because, and it could be something like, you know, when you're in high school, sometimes I still remember this and I have regret for this, because there was this one kid who was like a big, big, burly, like teddy bear type of guy. And there's one kid who was sort of like one of the Islamic kids, but he was ripping him apart and putting him down and stuff. And then I guess in high school I was known as one of the Islamic kids at that point. And later on that kid came and told me, he said that, you know, I was really hurt. He wasn't hurt by that kid and what he did. He said that he said that to me and you were sitting in there and you didn't say anything. You didn't say anything. People are watching. And one time I gave like a small khutbah at one of the jummas, a like tiny jummah at Moffitt. And I was just speaking about the Uyghur Muslims. And ajib, that day there was one person in the jama'ah who happened to be a Uyghur Muslim. And he came to me after the jama'ah and he said, "Thank you. Thank you for not forgetting us." Because they feel like they're forgotten by the rest of the world. Right? You have to speak. Right? Speak truth to power. You should be no fourth category. Don't have haya in seeking knowledge. Sometimes people feel too scared to ask a question. La haya fil ilm. And I'll tell you, this was so much so that the sahabiyat, they're full of haya, they would ask the Prophet ﷺ about very delicate matters, right? About matters of menstruation and so on and so forth. And one of the sahabiyat would actually persisted so much that it put the Prophet ﷺ, he felt sort of awkward. It's like, I don't really want to go into more details. He said, "I should just explain to her." You know, like he had to ask his wife to explain to her because she was persistent. It's not like they didn't have haya, but they were so concerned about the ilm because they needed to know when we start prayer. They were so worried about, they want to know when they can fast and they want to know when they couldn't fast, to the extent that some of them would send the cloth that they would use at that time to have to Aisha radiallahu an to find out, can we pray or not? Right? It's not something like very normal. Like anyone else would like say, that's a little bit too much, right? What do they call TMI, too much information. But it wasn't too much information because they needed to figure out what to do. And it's so sad because, you know, sometimes so many people have so many questions about their deen. Shifa'ul ayyi aswal. The cure to ignorance is asking a question. You have like so many scholars who are sitting there sometimes in the thing. You have had that question for 15 years. Ask them. Right? Don't worry about if they're trying to judge you. Don't worry about, you should know that by now. ask, figure it out, and get past it. The fourth, the fifth category is an enjoining good, telling people to do good things. Right? That's not something that you should be afraid of. And the sixth category is forbidding evil. If you see something bad, sometimes you should be able to call a spade a spade. كنتم خير أمة أخرجت للناس تأمرون بالمعروف وتنهون عن المنكر. The reason that you're the best is not just because you're a Muslim, then live up to your name. You're supposed to, you know, you can't just say that, oh, I'm a Muslim, I'm an ummati, therefore I'm the best. There has to be a sifa. For every key, there are teeth. And the teeth of a Muslim is that enjoying good and they forbid evil. And this is something which is completely lost, right? This is actually wajib. It's not even something which is like nice to do. It's actually, it's a very high level of a responsibility. And there's a whole discussion that occurs, you know, amongst, when you look at, there's, I mean, Hassan al-Basri, he said, if you don't, you know, fear three ayahs in the Quran, then no, tell people these things. And يَا أَيُّ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا لِمَ تَقُولُونَ مَا لَا تَفَلُونَ. Why you tell people to do things, you don't do it yourself. There's a whole discussion. But without going to discussion, the idea is that still having to balance the idea that this is a responsibility. And now the new thing in this generation is like, don't judge me. Right? You're like, you're posting on your gram that you're at a club drinking alcohol and they're like, no, you can't judge me. Allah's the judge. Yeah, duh. Right? I'm not saying I'm the judge, but you're not supposed to drink. Like, no, you can't. Kisi ko kuch nahi bolo. Right? Don't say anything to anyone. Let me live my life. You do you, girl. Right? You do you. You live your life. We're not. That's not. It's not the Muslim way of doing things. We're a community of nasiha. And if you know, a deen is a nasiha. It's actually an atypical grammatical structure. A deen. Usually the mubtada is ma'rifa and the khabar is nakira. But over here it says ad-din an-nasiha. Both are ma'rifa. It's like they're one thing. And if you can't be a community of nasiha, people aren't taking nasiha. Right? It can't be a one-way street. If someone's going to give you nasiha, you have to be able to take it. If a person is giving you nasiha, don't take it personally. Think it as a blessing. If your wife corrects you, if your children correct you, if your uncles in the community correct you, just say, alhamdulillah, there's someone out there who still shows me the right way. Because sometimes, you know, you realize that our nose is always in our field of vision, but our mind actually filters it out, right, from the image. So that's why you don't notice your nose. And don't start looking at your nose right now. But we're programmed in that way, that we filter out. When something's too close to you, you actually filter it out. And that's why sometimes you need a view from the outside. And that's what other people do. So where does this disease of haya come from? It comes from the following. It comes from cowardice. Right? People have jubun. They are just cowardly. And it comes from a place of weakness. And it comes because of love of people. Three people. The three reasons. One of the reasons people don't want to say anything, they say, if I say to them, then they're not going to like me. Because people don't like to be corrected. If I stick up against the bully, then he might say something against me. If I, you know, tell a person that, no, you shouldn't be doing this, it's going to take away my popularity or so on and so on. Like, they're just worried about themselves. They don't want to ruffle any feathers. Right? Yes, it's uncomfortable to say something, but it doesn't mean that you shouldn't say it. Everyone wants to be in everyone's good books. But the only book that matters is the book of Allah. What about that book? So how do you deal with this? The first thing is that remember that no one respects someone who's weak-kneed. The second thing is to remember the أَغْذَرُ الْجِهَادِ أَن تَكُولَ قَلِمَةَ الْحَقِّ in the Sultan in Jair أَكَمَا قَالَ, is that you have to be able to speak truth to power. Right? Whether that's your boss. I mean, I remember when I was an undergrad, this one brother really inspired me, mashallah. He was a solid Muslim, mashallah. So he had a boss, and she told him, he used to deliver things in pharmacy school, and she told him that, you know, just deliver this, and she maybe charge something which wasn't right, or deliver less or something like that, just cutting corners. And he said, no, I'm not going to do it. And she said, no, you're going to do it. And he said, no, I'm not. She's like, they're going to fire you. And he basically looked at her and told her, look, you're not the one who gives me my job. Allah gave me God gave me this job. If He wants to take it away, then you cannot give it to me. And if He wants to give it to me, then you cannot take it away. And he walked away. He kept his job. Just speak truth to power. Right? Don't be afraid. And so that's important. And on the other side, let me balance it. Don't be haram police either. Right? So it's like, you know, because you have people, and that there is, that's a different spiritual disease. Because people become self-righteous. They think, mashallah, I'm a good Muslim. I'm going to prove to everyone how good of a Muslim I is by telling how everyone else is wrong. That makes me feel better about myself. And the Prophet says, first of all, you don't correct other people on matters where there's a difference of opinion. Number two, such people, you'll find that oftentimes they don't see their own weaknesses. Yeah, okay, mashallah, she's wearing hijab now. Mashallah, he's growing out a beard. But he can't control his anger. Right? And if you touch that about them, then they blow up. They don't see that they're struggling and that they had this huge struggle. And sometimes this is this lack of appreciation of the journey that it takes for people to come to righteousness is a seminal mistake that oftentimes parents make. The fact that we weren't always perfect either. It took a long time to get. We sat in with the mashayikh and we did so many ittikafs, and we, you know, it took time for us to get it through our noggin that deen is important and akhirah is important. And you think magically your 13-year-old is going to get that? They didn't sit in one particular talk. They haven't been around anyone except for our own selves, and we're not the best role models. Like, how is that going to happen? Like, they have to go through that journey as well, and you have to give them time to grow. So, and those people who go around, you know, telling people and criticizing them and being harsh, this isn't the perfect. وَلَا كُنْتَ فَضًّا غَلِيظَ الْقَلْبِ لَنْفَضُّ مِنْ حَوْلِكَ. This is not da'wah, and this is not deen. And it's actually their own spiritual death. The people who act in that matter, and the people who look at their fault, look for the faults in other individuals. This is a spiritual disease. And Imam Ghazali, he said it beautifully. He said that, you know, if you look for I think it was him. He said, if you look for the disease, if you look at the faults in others, just know that other people have eyes too. If you see a problem in someone else, almost inevitably at some level that same problem is in you. These are people who are quick to correct, they're argumentative, they're holier than thou. So when do you correct? You correct other people not because you want to have some self-inflated ego. You do it because it's a responsibility and you fear Allah. And out of the love for the other individuals, not out of irritation, not out of nafs. And you see sometimes like this, right? So the father doesn't pray any salat the entire year. Then Ramadan comes, and it's like almost like so much of deen in it, like even Arab and Desi culture is just cultural, right? It's what they're used to. And when the kids don't conform to that culture, it's not deen. They don't conform to their culture, then they lose it, which is also like super un-Islamic. It's something which is nafil, or something which is not even that important, but then they act so un-Islamic about something. I'll give you like an example. Like they're, like this one kid was telling me, like their father, like they hardly pray the entire year. They don't go for jamaat, nothing. But like Ramadan comes, the whole family has to be downstairs at this exact time for Tarawih, and we're going to pray together. Like that's just their thing. And if you don't, you're going to get beat, you're going to get this, you know. Like, the kids don't compute that. It doesn't make sense. And they're like, you're just contradicting yourself. You're not going to be able to do. The point of da'wah is to teach and to remind. And if someone already knows something, then sometimes reminding something about something they already know is only going to make them go farther away, right? So if you see a guy, he's walking with his girlfriend, you're like, brother, do you know that dating is not halal? No, dude, I don't know that. Yeah, he knows that already. You saying that, he's just like, I just need to take a different road so I don't run into this guy, like this nutcase again. It's not going to make him stop dating, right? But, you know, you make a friendship with him. Let him see you. And somehow, ud'u ila sabili rabbika bil hikmah. You have to know when to speak. You also have to know when to keep silent. I give you one story about that. There was this one very famous music artist overseas. And he met one of my teachers. He had like a big name, right? Like a national figure. And when he met one of my teachers, He was talking to him. He talked to him nicely. They had a very nice conversation. And that was it. He left. And then, you know, he, and this is something I mentioned to someone else earlier today. Sometimes when, you know, people are not ready to change, the point is not to change them. The point is just to drop the seed and give it time to grow. Right? And I'll give you another story about this. One of my teachers, he had come to Texas like 10 to 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago. And, you know, they kept a talk for him, and they called these, like, taxi drivers and stuff, whoever it was, and they said, just come and listen to this guy. So he came and sat, and he was giving a talk. And this is a person who later on in his life, there was like 300,000 people in his, you know, talks. But at that point, like, he wasn't a big name. He was just sitting there. He was giving a talk. And, the, like, the taxi drivers are just talking to him, themselves. And then after they left, they said, Sheikh, we're so sorry. You know, they were so disrespectful. They didn't, you know, value properly. And he said, no problem. He said, they were talking, and I was planting. They were talking, and I was planting. And truth be told, what happened is one of his students later went back to that same town 20 years later, right? And he saw so much deen there and traditionalism and all this. And he's like, what's going on there? And that same person was there, and he told him the story. Sometimes it takes a long time for a tree to grow, right? You have to be patient. You have to be patient with other individuals. So this is, I think I was saying another story, but I forgot what that one. But the idea is that you have to call with, oh yeah, the singer, right? So he said that that singer later on, he came back and he said, Sheikh, when I met you last time, how come you didn't tell me just like leave the music industry? He said that I saw music was in your heart, so I didn't say anything. I just made dua for you. Right? It's a hikmah. So Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahi anil Munkar doesn't mean hitting people on the head with the Quran, right? And the Sunnah and Hadith. Brother, this is a sahih hadith with proper tajweed, right? No, it's like that's not how it works. You have to call people with love. So this is something to just to bear in mind, that we should have the integrity to speak when it's indicated, and to stand up for what's right, because that's what's needed as a community, but we need to temper that with hikmah. Wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillah rabbil alamin. All right, jazakumullah. What's on the schedule next?